You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of a collection of cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled An Inner Nature of Man and Our Life Between Death and Rebirth. This is lecture 4, entitled The Vision of the Ideal Human Being, given in Vienna on the 10th of April, 1914. Yesterday, when we spoke of thinking, feeling, will, and perception, my task was to communicate certain experiences gained when, in the course of spiritual investigation, the human soul lives outside the body, with the purpose of learning something about the nature of the inner life. Today, my task will be to present such experiences from another aspect, for it is only by observing the inner life from all kinds of different points of view that we can discover the real truth about it. Try and really see in your mind's eye what I described yesterday, which is what the human soul sees when it is out of the body and looks back at the seer's own living body and everything which is connected with it physically, and what the soul experiences afterward. Call back to mind the experiences of the astral body and the ego when they gain increasing strength in the space into which they enter when they leave the body. There is also another way of considering the matter. The point is that it needs genuine spiritual research to come to the riddles of existence. And fundamentally, this is only possible if we look at the same thing from many different points of view. Yesterday I described the point of view gained when the soul leaves the body by simply going out into space and beginning to live outside the body in space. Another way of going out of the body is the following. To find the way out of yourself, you first of all try to enter more deeply into yourself and link up with the spiritual experiences through the element in the soul that is most akin to your memory. I have often said that we actually transform our inner life into something spiritual simply because as human souls we are able not only to perceive, think, feel, and will, but also to store thoughts and perceptions in memory. In the public lecture given on the 8th of April, I mentioned that the French philosopher Henri Bergson actually realized that the store of memories we hold cannot be regarded as directly connected with the body, but must be taken as part of the inner life, something which is entirely soul and spirit by nature. And in fact, when imagination begins to develop in clairvoyant consciousness, and the first impressions arise from the darkness of spiritual existence, the quality and the whole nature of these impressions are very similar to the store of memories we hold in the soul. When we begin to perceive with clairvoyant consciousness, the revelations from the spiritual world are like memory images, though infinitely more spiritual. We then become aware that our memory store is the first truly spiritual element in us, the first element through which we rise to some extent above the body. We also realize that we have to go further and draw on spiritual depths which are outside the experience we have of memory images in order to gain the floating images which belong to the realm of the spirit, like memory images but much more alive. This is something to hold on to. Something arises from unfamiliar spiritual realms which lie beyond memory. Our store of memories comes from experiences gained in the physical world. If we now turn the inner eye, EYE, back to everything we have experienced from the time in childhood when we perceived ourselves to be an I, capital I, that is, as far back as our memory will go, leaving aside anything external, and thus living entirely in ourselves, so that we enter more and more deeply into our store of memories and recollect things of which we are not normally aware, we come closer and closer to the point in time which is as far back as memory will go. If we do this often, so that we gain some practice in calling up long-forgotten memories, and this is possible, we strengthen our powers of recollection. A time will then come when images or imaginations of things we did not know before come up among our memories rather like flowers coming up among the grasses in a meadow. These come from entirely different depths of spirit than the memories which arise merely from the soul. And we then learn to distinguish between things that are in some way connected with our memories and the things that arise from spiritual foundations and spiritual depths. Gradually, we are able to develop the power to let spiritual reality arise from its foundations. This allows us to go out of the body in a different way from that described yesterday, where we went straight out of the body, as it were. By the method described today, we first go back through our life. We enter deeply into our inner life and learn to strengthen the powers of recollection until we are able to let spiritual realities arise among our memories. In the end, this will enable us to penetrate beyond our birth, beyond conception, and into the world of the spirit that was our home before we united with the hereditary substance for our present incarnation. Passing swiftly backward through our life, we find our way into the world of the spirit, into the time before we entered into this incarnation. There is a great difference between this method and the one described yesterday. Please take careful note of these differences, for in these lectures I am going to speak of many finer points and subtleties connected with the life and the spirit. It is often difficult to find the right words for these, but it is possible to find the right approach and gain a reliable basis for our thinking if we become fully aware of these differences. Leaving the body by the method I have just described is very different from the method I spoke of yesterday, where you feel that you are in a space that is outside the body. You leave the body and fill that space, as it were. If you follow the method given today, space ceases to have any meaning. You leave space and live entirely in time. In this case, it is meaningless to say, quote, "I am out of the body," close quote, as those words suggest a position in space. What happens is that you feel yourself to be in a different time from your living body. You feel yourself to be in the, in quotes, before, in the time before your incarnation, and you perceive the body as existing afterward. You are wholly in the flow and progress of time where before and after have taken the place of outside and inside. Going out of the body in this way, you are actually able to enter into the realms where we live between death and a new birth. You go back in time and come to know the life you lived before your present life on earth. Your life on earth presents itself in such a way that you ask, quote, "What lies ahead there in the future? What presents itself to me as the hereafter?" Close quote. Here you have in more accurate detail what I have not been able to give what I have not been able to go into fully in the public lecture, which is how we can actually enter into the realms where we live between death and a new birth. This way of going out of the body has much greater inwardness than if one does so by the other method, which does not take us out of space. Anything connected with the truly inward depths of the soul can only be grasped if this second method is used. To begin with, let me tell you something that will show you how we must try and get behind the finer and more subtle aspects of human life. We live our physical life here in a physical body. We use the senses, perceive the world, develop an idea of it, feel in it, and through our actions try to be of value in this world and be conscious of our actions. This is our everyday life on the physical plane. Yet, every human being who wants to have real inner feeling for human dignity must know that there has to be a higher life, and indeed, there has always been a higher life of the soul. There have always been religions which offered the realization of a higher life, and in future, the science of the spirit will bring realization of a higher life. What are the goals of this higher life, in which our thoughts, feelings, and inner responses go beyond anything the physical plane has to offer? Some have only a dim idea of this in religious life. Others see it clearly outlined in the science of the spirit. And it goes beyond anything the senses can perceive, that our brain-bound intellect is able to think and our bodies are able to accomplish in this world. The human soul inclines toward life in the spirit. To be inwardly aware of the reality of such a life, and know something about this life, which goes beyond physical life, this gives us our true worth. As long as human beings dwell in a physical body, they seek to enhance their worth and gain an idea of their true destiny by sensing, seeking to gain a feeling for and knowledge of the world of the spirit. The keynote of religious life and anything connected with it should be, quote, look up to the spirit and feel that spiritual powers are active in the physical worlds, close quote. And it will be the concern of those who consider the education of children to be a serious matter not to let children grow up in such a way that they live only with external and material ideas, but to convey to them ideas of another world. Leaving aside the narrow and dogmatic elements which are to be found in religious systems, let us use the word religion to denote something that draws human beings out of this physical world. With regard to the method I have just described, where the human soul goes beyond birth and conception into a world of the spirit which preceded life on earth and is then also beyond space, let us ask, quote, when we thus enter the world which lies between death and a new birth, do we find there anything which might be called a religion of that spirit land, something which might be compared with religious life on earth? Close quote. Many details have already been given of the life between death and a new birth, and more will still have to be given. At the moment the question is, however, quote, is there anything like religion in that life of the spirit, something which may be said to relate to the experiences we gain in that life, in the way the hints we get of the other world relate to everyday life on the physical plane, close quote. Someone who goes out of the body, using the method I have described, will find that there is something similar to a religious life in that spirit land. There you experience everything around you, both spiritual entities and events in that world, in the same way as you experience physical entities and events in the physical world here on earth. The remarkable thing, however, is that all the time, or at least for the greater part of the time when you are in the life between death and a new birth, you have before you the image of the ideal human being, a tremendous spiritual figure. Here on earth, everything which goes beyond human nature is our religion. There in the world of the spirit, the ideal human being is the religion. You come to understand that the different members of the spiritual hierarchies joined their intentions and powers so that man could gradually come into being in the stream of world evolution, as described in my book titled Occult Science. The gods had a vision of the ideal human being. The reality of this is not the physical human being as he is today, but a state of development where the life of the human soul and spirit reaches its highest level in a physical human being whose potential is fully realized. Thus the gods had the image of man before them as their highest ideal, their religion. In their mind's eye, EYE, they see as if on the far shore of divine existence the temple which is their supreme work of art, representing man as the image of divine being. When human beings are in the spirit land between death and a new birth, their further development consists in making themselves more and more ready to behold the temple which is the ideal of humanity. Here on earth, religious life is the exact opposite, for our inner feeling about it is that it must be a free decision, something we must find within ourselves, and that it is also possible to deny the religious element if one is of a materialistic mind. The more we live on into the second half of the time between death and a new birth, the more clearly does the sublime ideal of humanity, the goal of the gods, present itself to the inner eye, EYE, so that we cannot possibly overlook it. Here on earth we may be irreligious, because the soul loses sight of the spirit in the physical world. In the other world it is impossible to overlook the goal of the gods, for it stands out clearly. It is therefore particularly in the second half of life between death and a new birth that the image of the ideal human being presents itself as if on the shore of existence, that is to say, on the shore of onflowing time. Please note that everything said at this point refers to time and is outside space. There can be no theory of religion in that world. Instead, the essential substance of religion, which I have just described, is the subject of direct experience. No one can be irreligious in that world, for the religious ideal of spirit land stands before us. It is a self-evident reality. The goal of the gods presented in the most powerful and glorious imagination when we enter into the second half of our life between death and a new birth. We are then not able to develop a religion based on theoretical knowledge. But we, nevertheless, develop a kind of religion under the guidance of higher spiritual entities who are active on our behalf in that world. We cannot be taught direct experience or vision during the second half of life between death and a new birth, for this comes of its own accord. But our will, feeling imbued with will and will imbued with feeling, has to be quickened so that we may really strive toward the vision which lies before us. The will of gods and the feeling of gods flow into our will-imbued feeling and feeling-imbued will so that we may choose the path that leads to the goal. It is quite impossible to find the right words for a life which is so totally different. But perhaps we may say it like this. We, quote, receive instruction, close quote, in that life to help our understanding. Here on earth, teachers have to go through ideas, mental images, if they are to influence our feeling. In the other world, when we have passed the halfway point between death and a new birth, I have called this the midnight hour in my last mystery play titled The Soul's Awakening, and more will be said about it later. Our will and feeling are not very much alive to the vision of the magnificent temple in the far distance of time. Then divine powers send glowing warmth through the inner powers of our soul. The kind of instruction we are then given speaks directly to our inmost being, so that we gradually gain the power and the will to take the path which leads to the ideal we see before us. In physical life, we may be face to face with a teacher or instructor, and yet feel that they are speaking to our heart from outside. When we are given instruction by our spiritual teachers, who are members of the higher hierarchies, we feel that they let their own powers flow directly into our inmost being. Earthly teachers speak to us. In the life between death and a new birth, spiritual teachers pour their life into our souls as they give religious instruction in the spirit. more and more intensively, we feel our teachers from the higher hierarchies to be within us, and we feel ourselves to be more and more closely connected with them. As a result, our inner life gains in strength and power. Quote, "You are more and more accepted by the gods, who live in you with ever-increasing intensity and help you to gain in inner strength." Close quote. This is the essential feeling during life between death and a new birth, and particularly during the second half of it. We see how everything in the other life is designed to make us gain immediate experience in the depths of the soul itself. But then we reach a very important point as we gain experience under the instruction of the gods between death and a new birth. We see the ideal of humanity in the farthest distances of time, whilst the powers which are our divine and spiritual teachers have given to us depend on what we have made of ourselves in the course of our incarnations and the human life we have lived before. And so, living onward from the cosmic midnight hour, which is exactly halfway between death and a new birth, moving onward in the stream of time, and seeing the ideal of humanity in the far distance, we reach the point where we gain our final view of the ideal of humanity. Having reached this point, we have to say to ourselves, of course we do not actually say it, for it is an inner experience, but I have to use the words that belong to ordinary life. Quote, "Divine and spiritual powers have been working on you and become more and more inward in your soul, so that they now live in you. Now, however, you have reached the point where you can no longer take in these powers. You would have to be much more perfect than you are if you were to go on beyond this point." Close quote. This is a moment of decision, and we are faced with cruel temptation. The gods have done well for us, giving us everything they possibly can up to this point. They have made us as strong as the power we have gained so far in life will permit. This God-given strength is in us, and now temptation comes, saying, quote, "You can now follow these gods. Everything you are at this point can flow into the powers the gods have given you, and you can enter into the worlds of the Spirit, for the gods have given in great abundance." Close quote. It would be possible for us to become entirely spiritual at this point. The prospect lies before us. But to do so, we would have to turn aside from the path leading to the great human ideal. In other words, we would enter the worlds of the Spirit, taking all our imperfections with us. True, they would change into perfections there. They really would. We might enter with our imperfections, and because we have been given divine powers, we would have a real existence. Yet we would be entities who must renounce any potential still undeveloped in us, potential that could take us to the great human ideal. This would have to be renounced. Each time we are about to incarnate on earth again, we are tempted to remain in the world of the Spirit, enter into the Spirit and develop what we already have, which is now filled with divine powers, renouncing any potential development toward the distant religious ideal of the divine and spiritual world. We are tempted to be irreligious in spirit land. The temptation is all the greater because Lucifer's power over man is greatest at this moment in human evolution, when he breathes the words, quote, "Seize the opportunity you now have. You can remain in the Spirit. You can take everything you have developed into the light of the Spirit." Close quote. Lucifer tries by all available means to make the soul forget the potential which still exists, and the goal represented by the temple on the far shores of our existence in time. The present state of humanity is such that we would not be able to withstand the temptation of Lucifer at this point if the spirits whom Lucifer opposes were not to take a hand in the affair. The gods, who have their own avowed religion and guide the human being on the path to the human ideal, wage battle for the human soul with Lucifer. The outcome of the battle is that the archetypal image which the human soul has formed of earthly existence is cast out of time into space. Existence in space is attracting it like a magnet. This is also the moment when the parents attract the soul like a magnet, and the human being is transported into the spheres of space and gains a relationship to space. Because of this, everything around the human being, which might be a temptation to remain in the world of the spirit, is covered with a veil. Being enveloped in a physical body is an expression of this veiling. We are placed in a physical body so that we do not see what Lucifer desires to put before us. Once we are in the physical body and look at the world through our physical senses and the body-bound intellect, we lose sight of the aim we would seek to achieve in the world of the spirit when tempted by Lucifer. We then see the world of spiritual entities and events in the world of the spirit from the outside, in the way they show themselves to our senses and brain-bound intellect. And the spirits who guide us on the path to the ideal take charge of our developments when we are in the physical body. And now, let us ask, how much goes on in the subconscious depths of our soul between birth and death without our knowing about it? If we had to achieve everything in full conscious awareness, we certainly would not be able to achieve existence on earth. In my book titled The Spiritual Guidance of Man and Humanity, I have shown that when human beings come to physical incarnation, they must first of all mold the brain and nervous system and develop them further. They do it themselves, but they do it unconsciously. All this is the expression of a far greater wisdom than anything human beings are able to grasp with their sense-bound intellect. Between birth and death, a wisdom reigns in us which lies behind the world we perceive with the senses and think about with our brain-bound intellect. This wisdom which lies behind the world is hidden from us between birth and death. It moves and acts in subconscious depths of soul in us, where it has to take affairs in hand, as it were, because the human being must be snatched away for a time from a sight that would be a temptation. Under normal conditions of life, without careful training to take us into the world of the spirit, we would be tempted at every step, all the time we live in our physical bodies, to abandon all our undeveloped human potential and follow the upswing to the worlds of the spirit, taking our imperfections with us. We need our life on earth so that we may be out of reach of the temptation of Lucifer during this time. Up to the point in time when we are taken into space, Lucifer has no power over us, for there is always still the opportunity for further development. Lucifer comes on the scene when we are on the point of decision. Because of our previous life, we are unable to progress, and so we are tempted to go astray and remain in the world of the spirit, keeping our imperfections. The progressive gods whom Lucifer opposes protect us by snatching us away from the world of the spirit, hiding it from us, and doing the things that have to be done out of the world of the spirit, which lies behind our conscious awareness. And so we stand here in the world as human beings, conscious in our physical body, and say to the gods, quote, "Thanks be to you, for you have left us just as much possibility of knowing something of the world as is good for us." Close quote. If we were to see behind the threshold, at the horizon of our conscious awareness, every moment would put us in danger of not wishing to achieve the goal of humanity. Between death and rebirth, we were in the brighter, higher state of consciousness, in which we are in the spirit, with spiritual worlds and spiritual entities all around us. We had to be taken out of that state and into the world of space, where we are unable to see the world that we are not strong enough to bear until we have gone through the time between birth and death. During this time, when we have been snatched from the world of the spirit, so that we are surrounded by material things and not by the world of the spirit, we have been given new impetus toward the far distant goal of ideal humanity. All the time we are on earth, when the conscious mind does not perceive the world of the spirit, the divine spirits who impel us forward are at work in us. Here, their work is not disturbed by our consciousness, nor by our being tempted to follow Lucifer. The divine spirits infuse the strength into us which we shall need if, after going through the gate of death, we are to press forward again and come a little closer to the ideal of humanity. With these words, I have indicated a further mystery which lies behind human existence, and I think it is good at Eastertide to turn our hearts and minds to the conditions of life between death and rebirth, which are to be found by going out of the body by the inward path, and to the life which follows when we are in a physical body. We turn to life between death and rebirth and become aware of the guidance given by the good divine spirits to help us on our way forward. We look up to them as to our past life in the spirit, and we now understand that our present life in a body, between birth and death, has been given to us by the gods in order that they may take care of our further development for a while, when there is no need for ourselves to take an active part. We perceive the world, think in the world, feel in it, will in it. We store up memories which allow us to have continuity in life. And all the time divine spirits are at work behind this conscious life. They continue to guide the stream of time, having released us into space. There we have just as much conscious awareness as the gods consider it right for us to have, whilst it is their will to continue to work behind this consciousness and guide our destinies toward the great ideal of humanity, which is the ideal of their religion. Looking at our inner life in this way, it is the inner life which our conscious mind is unable to perceive and explore under normal conditions of life. Let us try and enter wholly into the feeling, quote, here something lives in you which you cannot fathom with the normal powers of human life, yet it is the deepest and inmost life of the soul, close quote. Let us try to become aware of this life of soul so deeply hidden inside us, and then try to become aware that the gods reign in this life of the soul, which we ourselves do not guide. This will give us the right feeling, a true Easter feeling for the God who reigns in us. It is to this end that I wanted to say these things today, and not so much for their abstract content. If the soul is able to contemplate what is revealed to it as it goes out of itself into space and fills space and is able to know, quote, out of the divine I am born, close quote, what I have said today will deepen that knowledge so that the soul may be aware, quote, with everything I know and everything accessible to my soul in perception, thinking, feeling, and will, I am born out of a deeper soul life which is still with the gods, moving in the stream of time, but moving together with the divine principle, close quote. We become aware of a knowledge which can come to expression in a much deeper sense than the sense in which I spoke at the end of yesterday's lecture. As the result of today's studies, the words, quote, out of God we are born, close quote, can be spoken with much deeper meaning, for we realize that this soul and everything it is able to know about itself is at every point in time born out of the divine, and at every point in time we can fill our deepest inmost being with these words, out of God we are born, ex Deo nascimur. The end of lecture 4.